Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 5th of December, 2016, and today we are talking about solutions, rather than dwelling on problems. And we're going to bring in an InfoSec expert, father, husband, crypto anarchist, journalist, and entrepreneur by the name of Virgil Viduva, who is at virgilviduva.com. But more importantly, you're going to want to go to getsell411.com at some point during or after today's conversation in order to get Sell 411, an app. And this is an app that is based on a very simple idea, but I think has far-reaching implications for how we can come together to organize ourselves and really take advantage of our own networks of friends and associates in order to leverage our ability to respond to emergencies. And so in order to explain what this app is, how it functions, what it does, why it came about, and where it's going to go, let's bring in Virgil Viduva himself. Virgil, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Good morning, James. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I've introduced the app and the idea, or alluded to the idea, but perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about this app, how it came about, and what it actually does.
Sure. Yeah, so basically this app, and just to go back a little bit before that, is it's kind of a growth of my own political and philosophical struggles and growth like we all experience in our own lives. I spent half of my life in communist Romania. I was born there and then moved to the United States here to, came here to go to college, met an American girl and got married, and then kind of organically grew through, like many people do. I was a Republican, Reagan guy, and then kind of eventually became an anarchist or a voluntarist. And, eventually also got to connect with the guys from KaBlock. Many people actually are aware of what KaBlock is. It's a police accountability organization, but I wasn't deeply involved with them necessarily. I just kind of tangentially, supported them off and on. And a couple of years ago, I was arrested at a local protest here against police brutality. And that was the time when I realized that, activists specifically, and not just activists, but virtually everyone, we need better ways to notify our neighbors, our friends, our families when certain events, more specifically emergencies, take place in our lives. And that's kind of the turning point for me when I figured, hey, we need to create an app or some sort of an emergency management platform. About 6 months after that, we had a beta version out of this app. And basically, it's a very simple app. Like you said, it allows users to organize themselves in these decentralized groups. We call them cells. And they're basically groups of people. It can be two people. It can be 2,000 people that can communicate or stay in touch with each other and manage emergencies. So let's say, James, you're driving down the street or your wife is driving down the street. She gets a flat tire and she can fire up Cell 411, tap a couple of buttons. Her exact GPS coordinates go out to you. And all your family or all your friends, depending on who she chooses. So people basically that she can trust, not police or not government employees, they know exactly where she is. They can come and help her. They know the distance. They can get turn-by-turn directions and so on. So it's a fairly straightforward approach to basically using or appealing to people you trust, not government employees, to come and help you when you need help most. Because there have been many cases where people have called 911 to ask for help. The police show up and they shoot their dog, or they beat you up. They search your home without permission. They find a plant in your pocket and they throw you in a cage. All kinds of instances like that, and examples where it's clear that police are not there to help you, but rather harass you. So that's basically the history of Cell 411 in a nutshell.
So just to be clear, these cells are self-organized and self-managed. You are adding people that you know and trust to these cells. It's not that anybody on this app can find your information.
That's right. So there are several ways in which we allow users to manage cells. Users can make their own cells. There are two types of cells. You can make private cells where you can invite your family and your neighbors. So let's say you don't want these cells to be visible, obviously. These are completely private. So you can create a cell that has only your family members in it. And then they also add you on their end as a friend. Think of it as Facebook for emergencies, more or less. That's the best way we can describe it. And you can add friends to the app. They can add you as a friend, and then you can organize these individuals in groups as you see fit, which then in turn allows you to send emergencies to certain groups and certain cells. When you need help. We also have these things called public cells. So users, which we also don't manage, users can create public cells. Let's say that, for example, you want everyone in your town. You live in a small village. Everyone in your town, you have burglary problems or theft problems or, you know, crime issues. And you can create a cell for your entire village, and everyone in town can join it. And then people can kind of alert each other if there are problems, if there are criminals at large, or if there's a fire somewhere, or if someone needs help down the street. It's a very simple but very effective and powerful way to allow users to manage events and emergencies in their lives.
So in a sense, it's a decentralized communication platform, almost like a social media, but more specifically for these types of emergency activities.
Yeah, pretty much. We call it a micro-social networking platform where, we don't have a website where, like Facebook, where users log in and do, you know, post things or anything like that. It's a much more simple approach than that. We're actually working right now on adding, a way for users to chat, or communicate in real time after an emergency is issued. So that way, right now we lack that ability. People can call each other on the phone or communicate via other means, but right now, we're going to add a way for folks to basically spin up dynamic chat environments for each emergency they issue. So that way, for example, your family can talk about a flat tire someone gets in real time without having to send SMS messages. You know how people are. You know, I don't know the phone numbers of all my friends, you know, and once you start sending text messages to a group of 10 or 20 people, things can get really, really, right. Complicated and confusing.
Right, yeah.
So I think we're trying to simplify that. And of course, when we add geolocation into that equation, things get a lot easier and everything starts making sense because everything within the app is really centered around GPS and location coordinates. So that way we can help people out wherever they are.
Right. So you know exactly where to go for the person who's in the emergency situation. And of course, the first one that you talked about and that I think most people will understand is the situation of someone in a police encounter of some sort that needs help in that way. And there are some interesting tools to help persons in that situation, not just the ability to issue an emergency and for people to be able to get there directly, but also live streaming of video, which is unerasable by those law enforcement authorities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. So this was a feature I wanted to have within the platform from the very beginning. And live video is really, really hard to do. It's hard to do it right. It's complicated. And this was born kind of out of my own, activism history, because we've had instances, and I can count many people that I personally know where their devices like smartphones and cameras have been confiscated by the police because they're recording police activities. And either footage has been erased, smart cards have disappeared out of their video cameras, you know, all kinds of very questionable behavior on the part of government employees, you know, after they got their hands on these devices. So what we've decided to do from the very beginning was this, basically. We said, let's add video streaming as a core feature of our app, of our platform, and deploy it and architect it in such a way that it's nearly impossible for the video footage to be erased. And the footage is saved on our back-end infrastructure. It's also streamed at the same time to several Facebook pages, if you so choose. It's streamed to our public YouTube TV channel, which we have a public YouTube channel where users can choose to stream their videos as well. Or you can even stream to your own YouTube channel if you so desire. You can you just have to go in and configure it within the app. You have to put in your YouTube key, your stream key, and your credentials there. And video will be streamed to all these locations at the same time. On top of that, you can stream directly to all your friends' devices as well. So, for example, if you get a flat tire or if you're assaulted by someone and stream video, I can watch it on my phone. Someone else can watch it on his phone, or 2,000 other people can do the same thing. On top of that, we can also save the video locally to our own devices. So it becomes extremely difficult for footage to kind of magically disappear or get erased by a malicious user and so on. So, you know, I would like to think we've developed a platform that is censorship resistant. I wouldn't call it censorship proof because nothing is 100% guaranteed. But I think we've built it as solidly as we could, and as resistant as we could to censorship.
Well, as the censorship technologies increase and advance, the counter censorship technologies will continue to increase and advance. So there's always cracks in the system.
Right.
This is beautiful, and it is really just an extension of what I was putting forward in a podcast I did a few years ago on the idea of suvalence, that this is one solution to turn these surveillance technologies back against the system and to use them for the good purposes that they can be used for. And as I say, the police situations is probably the first one that comes to mind for a lot of people, but by no means is this app limited to streaming encounters with police. Tell us about some of the other activities that people have used this for.
No, not at all. We've had instances where, you know, a guy just a few months ago, I heard about a guy calling into a radio show talking about how Cell 411 saved his neighbor from being taken to jail, for example. He just started live streaming an encounter between his neighbor and some other individual. And then the police showed up and he was able to kind of, you know, save his neighbor out of the situation because it was questionable as to who was at fault and what was happening. You know, the recent situation in Ohio State with a stabbing guy that went on a stabbing spree, situations like that are really handy for video to be available, not just for law enforcement and for criminal prosecution, but just for the general public. If, you know, everyone can be a journalist today if you just kind of dedicate yourself to being vigilant and watching the events that are happening in public there, especially dangerous situations like that. It would be really nice to have footage of what happened at Ohio State, for example. So, video streaming should not be limited just to encounters with police. I strongly believe that video, especially in a public place, is a powerful deterrent to crime, and it can really help people out. We also have a feature, by the way, it's called a fake video erase button. So if you're actually in being coerced, you're in a situation where someone is coercing you to erase video, and that individual may not be aware of what Cell 401 is and how it functions. You know, we have a fake button that actually will kind of make the individual believe that you're erasing the video if you're under threat of force or violence. And that kind of gives people an escape, a potential route of escape out of a situation that could be violent or dangerous. So we've kind of tried to build this app, based on on my own experiences as an activist and all the situation I've experienced. But we're still learning. We've only been around for about a year. You know, every day I get requests from people with new features and new ideas that people have, and it's hard to stay on top of everything, but we're doing our best, and I think we're doing pretty well.
Well, it seems there's already been quite a bit of development, and I understand that you recently launched the fifth version of the app?
Yeah, version 5 came out a few months ago with a major new feature, which is basically a ride-sharing feature. And we did not, when we started with this idea for this app and this platform, we're a corporation. We had a small angel investor that helped us get off the ground. You know, I put a lot of money and finances into this myself. But when we started Cell 411, I didn't think of this as a ride-sharing app because that's not what, that's not what we do and that's not what I want to do. But more and more people within the anarchist movement or the voluntarist movement or the liberty movement, if you will, started asking about a decentralized way to kind of help people out when they need transportation, because the freedom of movement is a pretty big deal, if you're a liberty-minded individual, and it seemed to be kind of a good fit for us. So we just spent the last couple of months developing this feature, which is basically a very cool feature. Anyone can request a ride from any other user. You know, we don't get to dictate prices. If you choose to go into your settings within Cell4ON1, into your driver settings, you can choose any currencies you you desire to take, like Bitcoin and bartering and silver or cash. You set your own prices. You can edit your own formula for calculating prices. So it's really, really easy and very powerful way of basically just disconnecting users from, you know, these companies like Uber and Lyft, which are basically micromanaging every aspect of people's lives if they want to offer drives for, rides for a living. So it's actually a pretty cool feature, and we got quite a bit of press on that too. So, you know, it's nice to see the free market winning for once, because we don't really have any other competition out there that even comes close to what we do. So it's pretty
important. Virgil, what if two people decide to interact in that way and offer ride sharing, and they interact in some cryptocurrency and they decide not to pay taxes and follow all the regulations? Freedom, terrible freedom, mutually beneficial exchange. Oh no!
I know, right? Well, I hope they do, and I encourage everyone I speak with to not pay taxes and use you know, untraceable currencies if they can, you know. So I was in Austin, Texas, about a month and a half ago for a launch party for version 5 of our app, and I got rides back and forth from the airport in exchange for silver. I paid with a couple of silver ounces for my ride, and people were, wow, you know, actually this is a thing, you know? And it's really interesting to see people, the wheels turning in people's heads and thinking, wow, this is actually really, really cool. I don't have to tell anyone about this. I don't need to get permission from anyone to help other folks out with rides. It's actually very cool to see liberty working in the free market at work.
So it's actually what things like Lyft and Uber should be, actually decentralized.
Exactly, yeah, except they don't do that, and they're very, very focused on micromanaging everything. And really, Uber and Lyft, they take between 25 and, I think, even in some markets, they take 30% out of their drivers' fares, which is a huge amount. So we're trying to kind of not do that. We don't even charge drivers for their rides at all. We don't have any fees or anything like that right now. So it's completely free.
All right. So police emergencies, stuck or stranded, ride sharing, medical emergencies, community organizing. What are the other ways that this app can and has been used?
Yeah, so one example is fire dispatching. So we have something in the app called dispatch mode, which once you enable, you can actually dispatch emergencies on behalf of other people. And this really came as a result of a small fire department in Tennessee. It's a voluntary fire department out in the woods, you know, very small town, and these people could not afford to hire a 911 dispatcher full time, and they reached out to me and they said, "Hey, Virgil, can we add a dispatch mode in this so that way, you know, our dispatcher or one of us or whoever else in town wants to do it can dispatch emergencies, you know, on our behalf or on someone else's behalf." So it's really nice to see even firefighters and folks that otherwise would work for the government, although these guys are voluntary right now, are volunteers, reaching out and seeing all the potential in this app. So I think the key for us right now is to continue to listen to users like that and see where we're heading. And of course, the next step for us is really our commercial side, which is a web portal. We call it a control room, where organizations that decide to white label our app, for example, can log in and see all their users. Think of a very large university, for example, you know, that would encourage all their students to use Cell4ON1 for emergency reporting or reporting crime or you know, keeping each other accountable, for example. It's a perfect environment for something like that. So we've been working pretty hard for the last 6 months on a commercial side or a commercial version of Cell4ON1. And it's coming around pretty well. I'm pretty excited about it. So maybe, you know, I'm into this to hopefully make a little bit of money as well and see some commercial success out of it. But we're doing pretty well. And the future is very exciting for us. I'm not ready to talk about everything that we're doing, but I think in 6 months or so to a year, you're going to be pleasantly surprised to see what direction we're heading in.
Well, I like to hear that. And I think we should stress, I don't think we've actually formally said this so far, but this is an app. It's completely free to download, free to use.
It is. Yeah, it's completely free. It doesn't cost anything. You know, you don't pay to send emergencies out or alerts. You can send as many alerts as you want. It doesn't cost to respond to other users. And we also have this patrol mode, which is another option in the app that allows you to basically respond to emergencies from strangers. So let's say that you use Cell 411 in your community, in your town, everyone knows you, but you travel away from home. You're out on vacation 2,000 miles away in California somewhere, and you don't know anyone, and something happens. So you can issue this thing called a global alert, and users in that area that have patrol mode enabled, they see your alert and they can come and help you if you wish to appeal to strangers for help. So again, it's very powerful. It's we've designed it in a very simple way so that way users intuitively understand how it works. But you know, the idea is really to just connect people, like you said earlier, connect people, put them in touch with each other, and make it easy for them to help each other out. No government involved, no phone numbers to call. No people in uniform showing up to harass you and ask you whether or not you have drugs in your pockets or guns on you or any of that stuff. So it's truly about helping people out.
You know, Virgil, it sounds like this isn't just about protecting yourself from the agents of the government. It sounds almost like this is the first step towards replacing the government.
Exactly. And that's really the key and the foundation for this. About 2 years ago or so, it was kind of like a revelation for me to realize that, hey, it seems like, the idea of public safety and protection, it's kind of like the last leg outside of the roads, right? Because you always get people asking about who's going to build the roads if without the government. But protection and justice and defense, it's kind of like the last thing that the state is kind of hanging on to, if you will. They like to play the fear-mongering card. Without police, it would be total chaos. You know, people use this, you know, it would be anarchy without cops. You know, people would be burning your house down, you know, burning stores down. Of course, that's not true. But I would like to think that Cell 411 and this platform is the first step towards kind of undermining that claim that the state makes, undermining this idea that without us, you're in danger, which is BS. We know that's not true. You know, America, and as an immigrant, as a foreigner who came here about 20 years ago to live here, I'm very familiar with America's history. This country was built on rugged, very self-determined individuals, independent-minded folks, people who could defend their own homes, take care of their neighbors, take care of each other without the state, you know? And I think, I would like to think that Cell 411 is kind of playing to that tradition, playing to that idea of, we're all rugged individuals. We are all proud to defend our own families, defend ourselves, defend our neighbors, and take care of our own communities. And I think it's working. Although in some ways, you know, we see these younger generations of Americans, which are, you know, largely socialists, and they're proud of their socialism, and they seem to reject many of these more traditional ideas of self-reliance. So I think the future will kind of tell, you know, how things will turn out. But I think for now, you know, it's a process of education, encouraging people to take responsibility for their actions. And that's the direction we're heading into. The future will kind of tell us if we're going to succeed.
Well, I think a key part of that education is actually showing people that it is possible to have another
right.
way of organizing society. And this type of idea, this type of app is one step along that road or along that path. So it's so important that this is being done. And again, it is a simple idea in one sense, but I know to bring it about and to actually make an app like this possible, it takes an incredible amount of effort. So my hat's off to you for actually putting the effort in to make this possible and to get it up and running.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see how it came about because, it's been on my mind. Something like this has been on my mind for a while. And then finally last year we said, hey, guys, it's time for us to get this done. Enough talking. We have some architectural ideas in our minds. sat down with a couple of friends and started working on it. And like you said, it's a lot of work because mobile development especially is very difficult. You have very limited real estate. You have that 5-inch screen to work with. You have user experience to take into account. There are a lot of things to think about when you develop mobile apps. It's not just, you know, we'll turn something around in 2 weeks. And then as you develop more, more users come up with more ideas, which are, you know, usually good ideas, but difficult to implement. But I think we've come a long way, James. And I think we have just a few more big features to add. And I would like to think that will put us, 80-90% in that range of where I would like this app to be. And after that, we can focus on just fine touches, you know, here and there, and polishing the overall app, and then focus on user retention, because like I said, users are key. And the more, this is a social networking app, the more users participate, the better the platform is, really. So
it's the network effect. Yeah. Like any other social media platform, the more people that use it, the more important it becomes and the more useful it becomes. So on that note, Corbett Report listeners can, if not get in on the ground floor, at least get in on a very low floor of this revolution. And you can say you were there at the beginning by downloading the app. So let's direct people once again to the website.
Yeah, it's getcell401.com. Download it. It's free. We have about 89,000 downloads or so far, with about 65,000 active users. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, most startups would kill to have that many users within their first year of existence. So, and this is all organic growth. So we're doing really well, but we need to do better. And I think it's an education process. We're very, Cell401 is very popular in countries like South Africa, where violence is completely out of control. Police basically is useless in South Africa. And, you know, people kind of took things into their own hands. So South Africa is ripe for apps like this, and there's some competition there, and you see a lot of innovation in self-defense and emergency response in from the private market.
It's like countries that are undergoing monetary problems tend to suddenly see the light about cryptocurrencies. So,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it is interesting to see this playing out, and I am very interested to see what's coming next. And as you say, big plans in the future for the next 6 months or year. So we'll be looking forward to that.
Sure.
In the meantime, once again, we'll direct people to getcell411.com and to virgilvaduva.com to find out more about yourself and your other activities. But we'll leave it there for now, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again in the future. Virgil, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me, James. I appreciate it.